The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Happy holidays to those others who are perhaps not Christian, but do have Hollywood-type images of what this is all supposed to mean to us, and it's the only game in town. There are other religions, of course, and to all of you, happy holidays. So, okay, we're going to hear things tonight that you have never heard before. This is going to be another program of remarkable revelation. Do I insist that you accept it and believe it all? Of course not. But we are going to present it to you from two very remarkable and one extraordinarily remarkable man, William Mills Tompkins. Bill Tompkins has a book called Selected by Extraterrestrials, the first of several autobiographical books which detail his unbelievable life. He has this first book out, Selected by Extraterrestrials, My Life in the Top Secret World of UFOs, Think Tanks, and Nordic Secretaries. He was selected by the Nordics in 1942, assigned by the Navy to intelligence because of his remarkable memory skills, as you know if you heard the first program with us. Bill was exposed immediately to the Navy's knowledge of Hitler's UFO program, as you also heard. After the war, he began working in a think tank at Douglas Aircraft Company for aerospace executive Elmer Wheaton, and with naval intelligence to offer creative suggestions and designs for huge naval spacecraft carriers. The authenticity of part of the story is corroborated by editor Bob Wood. Dr. Wood, who was employed at the same time, same facility, and knew some of the very same company leaders. The Nordic Secretary's bill was given may have used their psychic powers to keep NASA on the right track for an effective Apollo program and to begin the covert naval exploration of the galaxy. Yes, Navy. Remember, don't think Air Force, think U.S. Navy. They're behind all this stuff. It's quite remarkable. So the book itself, Selected by Extraterrestrials, is available at Amazon. Should be under Bill Tompkins' name right now. And let's first say hello to Frank Chile, if he's on the line. Are you there, Frank?
I'm here. Good evening, Jeff.
Hi. Thanks for being here, and thanks for setting this up again. The first program was a barn-burning knockout, as they say. Just amazing.
Yes.
So what are we going to hear tonight?
Part two is going to be a stunner. It was a pleasure talking with Bill yesterday, and he shared some information with me that he said he would be willing to discuss on your program. And your audience is in for some extraordinary mind-bending
shocking revelations is what what I'm expecting to hear. And Bill Tompkins is an extraordinary 93 years of age. 92, 93, who's counting? You get up that high and it doesn't really matter. It never really does. And Dr. Bob Wood is well known to this program for many years as being someone who's been involved at the highest levels of the cover-up and the uncover-up, which is what we're hoping to get done tonight. So let's say hello to Dr. Bob Wood. Are you there, Bob?
Yes, I am, Jeff.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Does it seem like Christmas, Bob?
Well, tomorrow is Christmas Eve, and we're going to have our family here.
Good for you. Then it'll be Christmas. Okay. Let's again say hello to William Mills, Call Me Bill, Tompkins. Hello, Bill. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you for the program exposure here.
Oh, of course. It's just extra unusual to run across anybody with your background, your abilities, your capabilities, and your experience. And again, I have to caution people, make up your own mind, but I would urge you to buy the book. Listening to Bill tonight, we're going to do this a little differently than we did last time. Last time was kind of a timeline progression. We're going to talk about some specific things tonight that Bill came into contact with. Didn't just hear about them, he experienced them. And some of them are going to be amazing, I guarantee it. What did you think of the first program, Bill? How did you come away with that?
Well, I enjoyed having a chance to talk about some of these things because it's, it's sort of like a person being able to, things he's been involved in for many, many years, and hopefully that some of the people listening will not just listen to what's said, but drop by the bookstore and check out other books on the subject. I think like Bob Wood's book, Alien Viruses. That's a tremendous document.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it's something that people should read.
Well, hopefully they will. And let's try and tantalize them tonight with Bill Tompkins. And we're going to talk about, I'm just going to pull up some subjects that were referenced to me earlier by Frank as things that that Bill would like to talk about, and Bob can certainly comment on them. And let's get going. There has been, for years, talk about a vast system of underground tunnels all over the United States, probably all over much of the developed and undeveloped world, but especially here in the U.S. Underground tunnels that have extraordinarily high speed transit systems in them, whether they be maglev or vacuum tube, I don't know. I would sure like to know. Bill does know. He's been down there and seen some of these things. So it's not also something that we need to look at as contemporary accomplishments. It is said that there are tunnels down there, tunnel systems from ETs, tunnel systems that were built long, long ago by other visitors, perhaps, or other forms of intelligent life on this planet. So there's a kind of a mix down there of these tunnel systems which are linked together, and apparently most of them have these high-speed transit options for people to take. They don't get down there and drive trucks and cars. It's much different. So let's go, Bill, into the underground world of tube tunnels. Tell us about your experiences. When did this first start? And as a young man, when you were making your models, did you ever think that you would be involved with underground tunnels?
Oh, gosh, that's... No, who would ever think you would be involved with tunnels?
Not me.
That's wait a minute. That's ridiculous. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
But it was interesting in the Douglas think tank to... have one of the PhDs, and we had dozens of them in there, drop by our office where there was another fellow like myself, June grad type, and he and I had worked together to support the requirements of the think tank. So a fellow dropped back, and he said, I need a program on. I need you get to put together a package. I need a design and a capability for handling communications from different locations underneath the ground.
Right, and, underneath the ground. Okay,
yeah,
communications from under the ground. All right.
And he didn't elaborate, and most of my information in the tank, they don't give me details. They just tell you to do something, and you go out and figure it out yourself.
Uh-huh.
But, so I was fortunate in that I had a photograph of an Air Force digger, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a 38-foot diameter capability. And it's photographic. Actually, it's in the book. The photograph shows some 30 Air Force personnel standing by this great big machine, which digs tunnels. And
I know the device. It's round. It's huge, and it goes through anything, basically. And it, what is it?
Is on page 101 of the book.
Yeah. Page 101. Thank you, Bob. The these tunnel boring machines, you never hear about them. They're just basically covered up by the mainstream media. They're not talked about. They're not shown. They've been around. I've seen pictures of these things from the 70s, and they were huge then. I can't even imagine the technology where it is today, 35, 40 years later. Okay, so tell us more.
Well, actually, it's interesting that we have different groups of extraterrestrials that are utilizing these tunnels.
Uh-huh.
They have them all over the western states. And, of course, they have them in Antarctica. And that was Admiral Byrd's problem, trying to handle those down there. But the capability of some of the extraterrestrials to dig these tunnels with their big boring machines... actually, they're sometimes 50 foot in diameter, and they operate on rail when they're completed.
Uh-huh.
But as the machine, as their machine, not the Air Force's, as
uh-huh.
their machine does its forward digging, it has the capability to take the material, whether it's just plain rock or dirt or whatever it is that it
uh-huh.
runs into.
Yeah.
And it converts this material into a glass and elastic type material, which then, as it moves through at 40 miles an hour, the backside of it, all of the material is used to fill up all the crevices that are breaking in areas, and it lines the tunnel with a type of material that produces light. And all of this is going at 40 miles an hour.
Now, hold on. Okay, hold on, Bill, if you would. 40 miles an hour. I have never heard of these machines, our machines, being able to do that before. I think it's something like 1 mile an hour or something. That's considered fast.
That's correct. You're right. You're absolutely right. And the situation... is, again, hard for people to accept,
mm-hmm.
but the planet itself has caverns all over the planet, underneath the oceans, underneath large lakes, all over the planet.
You're talking, now you say caverns, Bill, excuse me, are you talking about tunnels, or are you talking about larger caverns that the tunnels connect to?
Okay, I'm talking about the caverns which the tunnels connect to.
Okay.
And so what we have with the tunnels is that in some cases, as the tunnel is being built, they run into a cavern because they don't know where the caverns are.
Mm-hmm.
And they find extraterrestrial facilities there.
Ah. So the Air Force is down there digging tunnels, and they come across things that they weren't expecting.
Absolutely. And like the tunnel, it runs from underground the Pentagon to say the Air Force facility out on the desert here. That tunnel ran into two other tunnels during its construction and one large cavern. So they had to back off and go around it.
Oh, funny.
And so when it got to the Air Force facility here out in the desert, they built another tunnel over to the Air Force launch area on the Pacific here.
At Vandenberg.
But tunnels are all over your planet. I'd like to comment on that, if I may.
Yes, Bill. By the way, Bob, who's coming on right now, thank you, Bill. The idea of it being very busy down there is kind of humorous when you think about it.
Yes.
Okay. Bob Wood, go ahead.
Yeah, what I want to say is from a kind of an academic viewpoint, in the mid-50s, I remember the Scientific American magazine, which is viewed by many to be the most scholarly magazine of the academia, was talking about how easy it would be to make tunnels that were evacuated from over there, so they were in effect in a vacuum. You could get up to hundreds of miles an hour without any problem on magnetic levitation. Now, this was in the open literature in the mid-50s, I mean.
No kidding.
And actually, you can find that issue of the Scientific American magazine today. And after it described how simple and easy it would be to do this, there was absolutely nothing. No follow-up, no discussion of how you might engineer it. And in my judgment, that's when it went into the black world.
All black then thereafter. So Scientific American published a story about these tunnels in the 1950s on the magazine stands.
Yes.
And was it presented as someday we'll be able to, or was it presented as
someday we'll be able to, and it's not that hard.
I see. In other words, they were covering even then, but they were letting the cat out of the bag, and it was upsetting certain people, so that was kind of the end of it. I got it. That's amazing that they had anything at all in print in the 50s about the possibility of tunnel systems. Yeah, it's busy down there, very busy. All right, Bill, go ahead.
Well, it's just that the idea that there's also very large facilities there for research that both a naval person and some of the extraterrestrials work together.
Uh-huh.
And there's a very large facility that the Navy has out off of Highway 395 in the desert, and it's a Navy research facility.
Is that China Lake?
China Lake Naval Research Center.
China Lake 395 goes on the backside of the Sierras from L.A. all the way up to Reno and beyond. It's a highway.
It only goes to Lake Tahoe, as far as we were concerned.
Reno, yeah, I understand. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, that facility, as early as 1943, 1944, the Navy used it for all types of testing of not just the missiles, but virtually everything that they had.
Mm-hmm.
And in the project work that I had to do in the Navy, we flew out to that facility. We got our documents and we took it to people that were going to be studying that program. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting that they had the regular hangars and buildings around it, a lot of buildings, and all kinds of tanks for fuel and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But you go into the one building, and it's a large center building, and you walk down through a long corridor. It's above ground, and they had windows in it so you could see what's going on as you go between the buildings.
Yes.
The next building, you go down a stairway, or you take the elevator. If you take the elevator, you're going down quite a number of levels. If you just take the first stairway down, you go there. So I would go down, and I'd take my documents and bring them in and get together with the people that we need to get the project run.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very interesting thing that that existed that far back.
Now, what year was this again, Bill, please?
This is 44, 45 time period.
So China Lake had serious underground facilities in the early 40s. That's extraordinary. I had no idea. The idea of depth, how deep approximately were you able to find out that this facility went? Do you remember?
Well, for what I was doing, I only went down to the first floor, but a couple of times several of us took the elevator down, which I think was four levels.
Uh-huh.
And we just got out and came back up because we didn't have anything to do down there.
Okay.
In the ground, it's just like being in a large building.
Gotcha. Now, these tunnel systems that go all over the place have to have one thing in common. They have to have air. So there must be air outlets and intakes cleverly hidden all over the place where these tunnels exist, correct?
Yes, and those air intakes are the same as some of the aerospace companies' underground facilities located in several states here in the West.
Uh-huh.
And I guess an easiest way to cover that would be a friend of mine that worked with us at TRW. He was driving out to his mother's place in Provo, Utah.
Uh-huh.
And about halfway there in Utah, he was watching a bunch of birds and stuff, and he parked his car off the highway.
Yeah.
And then he came back and got the car and drove it over sort of a dirt road partway further. He got out of the car and he walked 2 miles. And as he walked the 2 miles, a piece of land, now this was quite flat, a piece of land with all the weeds and everything on it, and I'm sure all of the scorpions and the snakes, disappeared. And this opening was rectangular, and it was about a half a mile long and about a quarter of a mile wide.
Okay.
And, this,
and it, when you say it disappeared, it dropped down?
It dropped down.
All right.
And so this vehicle came down quite fast and then very slowly didn't stop, just went right down inside.
A disc or a flying saucer?
Well, it was a big cigar-shaped thing.
Okay.
And now he wasn't supposed to see that, of course.
Uh-huh. Who was this guy? Who was this guy again, Bill, that's taking the walk?
He was one of the fellows that I work with at TRW Space Systems.
Okay. All right. And this is occurring in Utah?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's about, I guess you go up through, you don't go through Salt Lake City, before Salt Lake City, but also there's other ones east of Salt Lake City and the Wasatch Mountains.
So this is basically a great big, enormous garage door to allow these interplanetary, if not interstellar, intergalactic ships to fly right into and then park.
Come out, yeah, and go down into the facility, which is now, of course, the big caverns. And naturally, somebody goofed because they should have caught him and made sure that he didn't witness this.
Yeah.
But there's another part of that. For several years, I had a great deal of work on this same subject up in southern Oregon. And I started a Navy League Council up there and was able to get some 30 lieutenant commanders and captains that were retired. Only one of them was active, and one Air Force pilot. In my council that I had for this Navy League Council, And so we had a research group on extraterrestrials up there for many years.
Where was this in Southern Oregon, Bill?
This is Medford, Oregon.
That's where I am.
Okay, well, it's just across the border from California.
It's about 15, 20 miles. That's it.
Right. And so this group, we had about, I started this council and I got Admiral Marsh from the naval base, submarine base up in Bremerton to come down and give a speech when we started this Navy League Council.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, in a very short time, we had about 200 people, but this group of 30 fellas all had their own airplanes, all but one. And they used the airplanes for business all over the West Coast here. So these fellows, now this is interesting, these fellows, way before I started this Navy League Council, had been flying their planes, usually small aircraft, maybe some twin engine, all around Shasta, Mount Shasta,
mm-hmm.
because not only they had seen the UFOs come out of Mount Shasta, for years, but they watched them to go into the Shasta. So one of the major programs that we worked on for several years was just taking their Jeeps, and we drove, eventually we drove all the way around a couple of times Mount Shasta trying to find these doors. Nobody ever found a single door.
The rumors about tunnels and caverns under Mount Shasta are legion. There are lots of them, of course. Go ahead.
Well, it's just all I meant to say, Jeff, was that here we've got fellows that were naval people in the war. They were very knowledgeable. They were all Navy
yes.
pilots, except for the one Air Force guy. We gave him a hard time. But these fellows lived up there in Medford, and we had really good facilities for support of their airplanes and everything. So they on their off time, they're out flying around and or jeeping around detailed areas. They quadrant them off into 6 sections and 20 sections and 40 sections, and on and off, they never did find one. But they had, three of the fellows were in a place on the northeast side when one of them came out and they couldn't see the tunnel. They couldn't see the door. It just went down. It was gone. There was no door. And out uh-huh. came the UFO.
Huh.
It's amazing.
Okay.
And as you're saying, Jeff, there's a lot of underground facilities up there and a lot of activities up there.
That's what I hear. I haven't seen much. Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
I'd like to put Bill's remarks into context. He has mentioned that he's got several books in mind, and one of them, of course, is published, Selected by Extraterrestrials. That's the first one that takes him there roughly up to
yes, yes.
The second one he has visualized is the one that kind of talks about the things that were done at TRW. And one of the next books is the ones that happened after that up in Oregon, which is what he's just talking about. So you're visualizing some of the content of the next two books that he has.
Fascinating. Well, this is a knockout because I'm at the convergence of the Cascades and the Siskiyous. That's where that Southern Oregon area is that Bill is talking about. It's beautiful. And I assume, or do I assume correctly, that there is an underground tunnel that runs probably under here and all the way up to Bremerton, Washington area? Are we tunneled up here too?
Absolutely. Yes, definitely.
If you're right, Bill, then the ET tunnel boring machines can do 40 miles an hour. They could turn this place into a honeycomb, a beehive of tunnels in a couple of years. That's amazing.
They have the ability.
Yeah. So a lot of these craft that are seen easily, obviously, go underground. They have enormous
yes.
hangar doors where the earth just will slide away sideways or drop down and they go right in. That's why they disappear so easily. Remarkable. There was also a very interesting event that happened in the Santa Susana Mountains up there at Rocketdyne. A craft was seen to come over, appeared to be in trouble. It looked like it was on fire. Landed there. An Air Force retired brigadier general saw this, went on up there, and the roads were cordoned off with unmarked military people. They didn't have any insignia on, and they wouldn't let this fellow in. He had civilians on. So he went back the next day and up to this area where this blazing craft had come down, and said he came back in his uniform. And the man saluted one of the guards and said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "I want you, son, to tell me exactly what's going on up here." And the soldier, or whoever he was, he wore an unmarked uniform, said, "Well, sir, all I'm privileged to tell you, all I can tell you is that a craft was in trouble. It landed here last night for repairs. It's gone today." And that was what he found out. So I assume that Rocketdyne is obviously worked into this tunnel system as well.
Absolutely. I worked at Rocketdyne for a while. Actually, I was working for North American.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, that was after I got fired at Douglas. And how I got fired is interesting, too. Rocketdyne was very heavily involved in reviewing and trying to copy extraterrestrial materials that were in the three vehicles that crashed at Roswell.
Back engineering at Rocketdyne. Very interesting.
Reverse engineering. Mm-hmm. And my brother-in-law was manager of the electronics facility there.
Uh-huh.
And he was personally working on some of their components, which I thought was really interesting.
Well, I should say. Now, let me go back, if I can, and you're going to cover this in a book or two down the road, the Oregon connection. All these gentlemen were living up here in the Medford area. I guess this is the 40s and 50s when this is going on. Very rural back then, not much population here. Was there anything else? There's a base. Well, let's call it an ET base at Lake Shasta, Mount Shasta. And what else in southern Oregon is of interest, beside it being a residential venue for these gentlemen? Is there anything else going on here?
Well, this took place actually in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I was back there.
I see.
And there were many situations that these fellas had been themselves before I formed this Navy League Council.
Mm-hmm.
They were interested in different UFO sightings.
Right.
And they were tremendously interested in finding these. And they fortunately had the facility at the airport where we had our meetings, our classified meetings.
Oh, at Medford Airport.
At Medford Airport. And the guy that's the manager there, he is one of the people that was partially involved in what we were doing. So we had a lot of people that were very interested in the whole extraterrestrial situation.
Uh-huh.
And several of the fellows had, this is very interesting, because we had a Navy Reserve facility just outside of Medford, just northwest. And that facility was for training people. And so we had a group of our Navy fellows would give briefings to the students in the schools there over on the facility where it was being used as a Navy Reserve Center.
Uh-huh.
So one of the Reserve Center chiefs, Navy chiefs,
uh-huh,
had his daughter out with a number of other children in the summertime. They were just on a picnic thing. And when these extraterrestrials came over, and started talking with them. They looked sort of like us. And they gave these children technical briefings. And it turned out all over Oregon, Washington area, in the, as you're saying, Jeff, it's sort of a rural area. So they, many of the students in the schools live in places where there's all kinds of open land, which is being agriculture or whatever.
Sure.
And so pretty soon, this got to be a standard. And of course, they were told, all the children were told, never to tell their mothers and father or the family what they're doing.
Hmm.
But it was a educational program for the students.
Run by ETs.
Run by extraterrestrials. And I thought this was... I ran into it because I did work over at the base, and I gave briefings there, too, and meetings. But the point was, this chief's daughter was the first one that finally she did tell the father. And, of course, he then immediately told the captain that I had in the Navy League Council. Mm-hmm. And, boy, that we started another investigation on the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they used a holograph type of presentation for the to do their demonstrations, and this of course floated. They would be on the side of the barn, or in the barn, or just right out underneath the trees. The kids after school would go out and they'd play and stuff, and it was very, very interesting. To the level of how much that was going on that the people in Medford didn't know. That's
really amazing.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, that's amazing. All right, now, we have to take a break for 2 minutes. Hold on, we'll come right back, Bill. I want to ask you, when we come back, if you've actually ever been in any of these underground tunnels or taken a ride or know people who have. So hold on, we'll come right back to that in just a few minutes. Okay, I'm back with Dr. Bob Wood and Bill Tompkins, aerospace engineer, extraordinary life, and I hope all of you will buy his book. Can't wait for the other ones to come out. This will chronicle and document things that I've been hearing about on this program and before over 25 years now. Just remarkable. And to have that group of people here in Medford and to have ETs who could pass, I assume they were Nordics, or something very close to it, teaching young people outdoors, indoors, wherever, about things. Very interesting, to be sure. Now, Bill, if we can, I'll save the rest of that for your book, but let's go back and ask you about the tunnels. Were you ever in, did you ever see any, or do you have associates
okay,
who did?
Let's back off a little bit. Let's get back into the Douglas Secret Think Tank.
Okay.
Bob doesn't know anything about. Okay.
All right.
I'm giving him a hard time here. One of the PhDs came into the work area where I was, and he said, "I want you to design a facility that will give us capability to blah blah blah." And so I need a preliminary.
Can you tell me what the blah,
Sunday.
Blah, blah is, Bill?
Okay. It was for a command center to be used
okay.
by the military.
Underground command and control center, all right?
Yes. And I designed this. I did the study, and then I made the drawings. I usually do the first program and at least two trade-off studies, okay? And I finally asked what they wanted. And so this then was to be an Air Force facility, and it was to be their facility tied in with the Navy's communication for locating extraterrestrials that would be coming into this region.
Okay, so this was is this Southern Cal? This is Southern California?
No.
All right.
This is underneath the ground in Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay, so that's where the SAC headquarters are. So this was something in Omaha to track incoming from off-planet ET craft that were coming into the U.S. or down to the U.S., right? And then, Lee, tracking coming and going.
Yes.
All right. And, now, we have geosynchronous satellites out 18,000 miles, which job it is to do just that, I am told, as well. They watch from out there.
But this is in 1953.
Before satellites, five, six, seven years. Yeah. Okay. So how were they tracking? What were they using to track them? Radars?
Yes, at that time.
Okay.
But I think what's interesting about this facility is that.
And you designed it. You designed it.
Yeah. Right. I designed it, yes. Uh-huh. And this, in fact, there's a drawing of it in the book. I forget what page it is. They went down 40 stories, and they were in a massive cavern on the edge of it.
Let me ask you to hold on. I'm going to rewind. They went down 40 stories. These are private contractors hired by the government to start digging, and they dug down that deep, or did they tunnel down that deep?
Well, they tunneled down, and...
That's awfully deep, yeah.
So that they actually have the facility in a cavern.
Okay. So did you know the cavern was there when you built this, or did they run into a cavern?
The government had located caverns.
Okay.
And, so this one was selected.
All right.
And this then allowed them to build a concrete dome, which was almost 20 foot thick. And inside this dome was everything that was needed as a massive communication center.
Wow.
And I was able, many years later, to, on another program, to have a meeting with the Air Force, and it was at the bottom of this elevator, mm-hmm. and in this control center. So, to me, I know all about what the design was, I know how they built it, I know where it was. But I never went to it. I never was there.
Okay.
And to be able to spend 2 weeks doing a lot of stuff in something that I had designed almost 20 years earlier was very interesting for me.
Fascinating.
And this, of course, had the tunnel that went right into the Pentagon. And so...
Did you see the tunnel, Bill? Did you see it?
I didn't go into it, but if we had just kept walking, yes.
So, okay. The tunnel comes to the facility you built. You have to go through a door to get to the tunnel? How did it interface with the building?
Okay, well...
I'm trying to get a picture
it's just
of this.
Like a small, okay, it's the entrance to the tunnel is just like a train entrance, a small train entrance.
Okay.
That's the easiest way. When you see it, and you look down the tunnel, all of the lights are turned on all the way down continually, and you've got the rails for the train, and it goes out both ways in a T shape.
Uh-huh.
But from the concrete center, it's only like less than a block to the station. And so there's several buildings underground off on the side, in fact, quite a few of them.
Uh-huh.
And so then the back side of this cavern, because the whole facility is built in that location, goes into the tunnel. The other side goes across the cavern, and there's a bridge goes in the cavern to get into another tunnel. We couldn't see that, but they showed that.
That's a huge cavern under the ground. Huge.
Well, the ones under Shasta are huge, too.
Well, the one you were in had your dome structure, and it had several other buildings built down there. It had a T-shaped tunnel interface with it. This tunnel, you said, had railroad, this is 1954, had railroad-type tracks. Was this something that was using trains to transit, or something like trains? Not maglev back then.
It was regular trains, but remember, I did the design in, 53-54.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so I didn't get to this facility. Even though they built it just a very few years later.
Yeah.
I didn't get to it until 15, 16 years later.
So it started out in 1954 as drawings from Bill Tompkins, and they built it, and you finally got to see it.
There's a drawing on page 334 of the sketch of what you're talking about, actually.
Okay, it's in the book, page 334. Now, some of you, we're just about out of time for this hour. Let me bring George Feiler on here. George, are you there?
Yes, I'm there.
Hi. This is all wonderful, and I have to ask Bill a question. Bill, were you warned or threatened not to disclose any of this material by anybody? Or do they figure you've been around long enough and you're going to do what you want and nobody's going to pay much attention? What's the deal?
So far, got fingers crossed. Nobody said anything to me. And I have to say, I know a great many people in the Navy, far more than the Air Force people.
Yeah.
And a number of these are extremely interested in having the information disseminated to the public.
It's time.
I won't say who the admiral is, but he made the statement. Well, I will say, Admiral Hugh Webster, he made the statement years ago that we needed every man, woman, and child in the country working on this.
Wow.
Yeah, his statement is on the back cover of the book, actually. He says,
yeah, I saw that.
Tell it all.
Yeah, I saw it. Bill, tell it all. That's what he told you. Tell it all. Okay, George, what are your thoughts on this so far?
Well, it may sound funny, but when I was in the Air Force, I had orders in case there was World War III or, you know, some similar type situation to go to some of these underground facilities. So I know at least that my orders were for one at Mount Weathers. I don't know if these other places existed. I just know that at least one existed. So, because I had orders to go there. And then in Turkey, I was actually in an underground base there.
In Turkey?
Near Izmir, Turkey.
That was one of our bases, I assume.
Yeah. Well, you know, part of NATO and so on. But these facilities do exist. I don't know if there is as many as he's been talking about, but there's certainly at least some that I could vouch for.
I'm getting the feeling that there's as much below ground as there is above ground, perhaps. I mean, it's awfully complicated down there.
Well, we used to know that.
What's that, Bill?
This is Bob. I'm just saying Nazis had an extensive underground network, according to some research documents.
Yeah, I've read some stories about their tunnels. There, a lot of them are flooded now in one area in Poland. And go ahead, George. Sorry.
Most of them underground were used to build their various aircraft and missiles and so on that they were afraid of being bombed. Russia had similar type facilities that. I don't know how extensive they are, but we know that a lot of these facilities exist. And I've talked to people who've been to Egypt and have been in underground facilities and saw tunnels as far as they could see that were perfectly smooth, about 25 feet in diameter.
Well, that goes back to what Bill described at the beginning of the hour of how the tunnel machines take the material that they bored through and superheat it somehow and then lay it in around the archway of the tube behind it as it passes along and leaving a perfectly round, smooth tunnel. In the ET tunnels, Bill said that they have some ability to make that material glow, so there's some illumination 360 degrees around these tunnels all the way. That's pretty neat, too. Well,
they do that same facility aboard their craft. We've had many reports of, you might say, lighted walls. Lighted walls and ceilings.
Right. Okay. Hold on a second. We have to pause. We'll come right back. An hour number two coming up with Dr. Bob Wood. Thank you, Bob, very much. And our special guest, Bill Tompkins, who has had 10 lives already, at least, I'd say. Back in a few minutes. Hold on.